to the show, everybody. Cairo Knights, the 9 o'clock hour here with your boys, Mace and Mike. And, of course, because we had a guest, we had a very special guest in the 8 o'clock hour, Tim Egan. He's a writer for the New York Times, won a Pulitzer. He is the author of a fantastic book about the Great Depression. If you missed it, we do a lot of looking back at history and trying to put what's happening here into context and what solutions and hope. It's actually much more of a positive story than it sounds, because we're talking about so many awful things. So if you missed that, check out the podcast, Cairo Knights, wherever you get podcasts. But it's time for Stacey Joe. Here we go.
Here we go.
Yeah, I like that. We'll do a little singing. You know, first, though, I got to say that Seattle Sports at Night is powered by Star Rentals, the preferred supplier of the West's best contractors.
Stacey's on, turn up the microphone. She's talking sports, so you're about to learn a ton. At 8:33, she hangs out with Mike and me. And you know from the song that now's the time of Stacey's on.
You know, Stacey, it's kind of like a running joke now that you're never on at 8:33. We always talk to you for longer, but I'm still going to play it. I don't care.
Thanks.
I'm not changing for nobody.
It's such a good song.
How you doing?
Good. Well, yeah? I mean, all things considered,
I know.
Mean, I'm personally good. It's a really hard time for everyone, but an important time. So, I think I'm like checking in day in, day out. At the end of the day, I check out. I watch some Bob's Burgers.
Great show.
Yeah, yesterday I mowed my lawn. I don't know if you guys know this, but lawns, you have to mow them.
Yes.
I learned that.
So I've heard. I used to have a house on a corner and it was up. It had like a retaining wall in front of it.
Yeah.
And the lawn on one side was at like a 45 or 50 degree grade. And I mean, you literally would just stand at the bottom and shove the lawnmower up. And then it comes flying back down at you, and you're trying not to fall off the retaining wall. And then you move over a length, and then
you know what the technique for that is?
What's that?
Weed eater.
That's what I hear, but it doesn't feel right.
It doesn't matter.
It didn't feel
it's
right.
It's much better than killing yourself with a lawnmower.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Degree slopes.
You're probably right.
And you're a landscaper.
I know. I did fertilizer, though. I wasn't a grass cutter. That's a different class of there are class wars among landscapers.
We are still fertilizers in a way.
Yeah, that's true. We all will be at some point. Stacey.
Oh, no. Aaron, you just got really... Now I'm sad because I'm thinking about my own pending mortality.
Okay, then let's talk about sports. The great distraction.
Okay.
I was looking at the rundown from the Tom, Jake, and Stacey show earlier today, and there was a lot of chatter about the MLB, about Major League Baseball, and 50 games, the potential of playing... A 50-game season. What's going on there?
Really, that proposal, I don't know that it's so much an actual proposal as it is that the league and its owners are not anywhere near close to what the players want. The big problem right now is that the players already agreed in March to prorated salaries, meaning, hey, we already agreed that we'd play half a season and get half our salary, and we already agreed to take a bit of a reduction. And the owners are now saying, but how about even more than that? And so the two sides can't really come to an agreement so far through a week and a half of negotiating. The MLB owners, we've talked about this before, proposed essentially that players get like a fraction of their actual prorated salary. Players have come back and said, okay, how about instead we just play more games? And so now what's happening, and this is according to ESPN's Jeff Passan, he said that if the owners and players cannot come to an agreement, then the league has discussed having a 50-game season, somewhere around 50 games. It could be 60, it could be a little under 50, but either way, a fraction of a normal 162-game season, and it would pay players the full prorated salaries. Obviously, it would be a way for the league to pay players significantly less while still paying them the amount that they would get. So they're getting more per game. They would just play significantly fewer games.
Right.
So that's the idea. I don't know that that's officially been the proposal, but it's something the league is throwing around because they've realized, rightfully so, that the sticking point for players has been, hey, what? Like, this is my salary. I already agreed to take less, and now you're trying to take more. And so rather than move that up, they've agreed to move the games down. So now you're looking at the possibility, if you're a baseball fan out there, of maybe there being a 50-game MLB season this year.
Can I tell you what I like and don't like about this?
Yes.
I don't like the idea that just from a stats point, and this isn't a strong dislike, but baseball is all about the stats, right? And the numbers and crunching those numbers, and they keep track of everything. Who was the last person to pitch a game that got four hits when they were wearing red-colored socks and threw with their left hand? And there's some stat in baseball about that specific thing. Was it day or was it night? They'll ask you. So I love the idea of that sort of depth in baseball. And when you shorten a season, that really sort of throws a wrench into, you know, the storied history of baseball statistics. Not that it hasn't happened before, because it has, but it's just something I'm not crazy about seeing. But
right.
On the other hand, the idea of playing fewer games, it kind of does what happens with football, where you've only got 16 games in the NFL, so each game is really important. Baseball kind of suffers from, well, what does it matter? It's one out of 162. If you truncate that, then each game becomes more important because there's more at stake and, you know, one would assume more interesting.
I mean, you know that old rule about baseball, right?
What's that?
That every team wins 60 and loses 60, and it's the 60 in the middle that matter. And it's true. So I agree with you. I don't actually agree with your point about the stats. I like useful stats. Baseball is known for stats, many of them completely useless.
Sure.
You know, has only hit a home run on a Tuesday in July once in his life.
Right.
Like that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, that stuff, I don't know. I don't find it fairly entertaining or really worthwhile.
Have some fun, Mike Lewis.
That is, I do, but I have fun with actual information, not faux information.
Okay.
But what I would say, though, is I think this could be, in my opinion, the best baseball season ever. Because you're going to actually...
That's a hot take.
Yeah. You're going to actually have the number of games you should have always had. Maybe 100 games. I am so completely done with any sport where you lose 60 games. You know, 60?
Right.
60.
Right.
You know how long it takes in football to lose 60 games? You could have a whole career and not lose 60 games. So yeah. I like the fact that baseball, I don't mind watching baseball. I enjoy it. But I love the fact that every game is going to matter. One of my favorite NBA seasons, other than when the Warriors win a championship, is when they had the lockout season, and it was like a 40-game season. 40 games in basketball at an NBA level is perfect. Watch everyone how hard they hustle for that period of time.
What's a normal NBA season?
How 82.
Okay.
And so that's difficult. You can't run that hard, that many games, play that many minutes, and not be complete in 100 games if you go through the playoffs. That's a lot of basketball games,
yeah.
And they actually move around as opposed to baseball players who frequently, like, you don't know whether you're, when you're looking at it, whether it's a still shot or video, right? And so I think 50 games is, and I'm serious about this, I would be very excited about a baseball season at 50 games.
Wow. What do you think, Stace?
Yeah, I would too. I've always kind of contended that, like, I would like fewer than 162 games. I think the tricky thing with 50 games, even though, again, like Mike said, it's so much more interesting to cover shorter seasons. It's what makes the NFL so good. Every single game matters. Every single play matters. That's why those calls are so controversial. And as someone who covers an NFL team and has been covering an NFL team for the entire tenure I've had in sports radio and sports reporting, it's a bit more of a marathon for me with the MLB, and I've never really loved it. But that being said, there have been so many amazing World Series winners, like, for instance, the Washington Nationals, that really needed that marathon to get there. If you would have stopped the season halfway, they wouldn't have been one of the teams in the playoffs. So I can see the reasoning behind wanting to keep that marathon, most especially for baseball purists. I think 50 games is a little bit low. I just see, here I am. I'm trying to argue like a devil's advocate against Mike's fiery hot take, but I keep ending up. It's like a circular kind of thing. I think I keep ending up right back where I like fully agree with him.
You got burnt.
But I will, to the hardcore baseball fans I know, they would love at least a few more, maybe 90 games, maybe 100, maybe 80 something, just something to make it a little bit more of a marathon so that there aren't teams that don't get a chance to have that second wind.
Mike is staunchly planted in his corner.
It may be 50 may be too many.
Wow.
Well, I was like, let's do 16.
Wow.
Do 16.
16.
Why not?
16 game.
That is actually pretty funny. I love the idea. I love the idea of 50 games. And if they get, so did they, I was thinking so much about 50 games and how much I like the idea that I may have missed. What's the current salary proposal on this?
For the 50 games?
Yeah. Is it just prorated 50 games, like they would have been paid normally?
It's prorated 50 games, although I believe that amount would still be, I'm looking at Jeff Passant, the math's a little complicated for me. It would still be the 50-game schedule with that prorated thing would pay the players 30% of their original salaries, just because it's so fewer games. So it's a way for them to say, like, hey, we're still paying you for the work you're doing. It's just we refuse to pay you more. And then,
that's the math.
I don't know how you're going to feel about this, Mike, especially. Aaron, I know you love good conspiracy theories. There's a belief among some folks that there may even be a handful of owners that would almost rather not have a season. I think there are owners that think not having a season would be catastrophic. But there's also the underlying assumption by, I would guess, all owners that every game you have without fans loses you money. So I think there may be credit to the argument that there are some owners that think, would I save more money by just not having a season rather than having a fraction of a season and then paying players?
I think that it would be interesting to, I mean, all the broadcast deals are fixed. I think that the owners also would lose money on not playing games to the extent that broadcasters would at least get a portion of what they've already paid for, which is the airing the game. So my guess is that the people who are worried about the money would also worry about, you'd lose additional money if you didn't play any games. I get that not having fans there is money, but depending on your local cable contract, I mean, if you're the YES Network in New York,
right,
you really want these games because you are foregoing a lot of money by not playing any games at all. So I think that it probably would pencil out for some. I don't know if you're the Royals, if it pencils out in the same way as if you're the Yankees or if you're the Mariners. But my guess is that having them on, I got to say, now thinking as a, and we're not really a sports bar, the bar that I own. But, and so we don't get like big crowds from, I mean, if the Mariners were in the World Series.
Sure.
And the fiction part of the show.
And then you wake up and
right,
continue your story.
Yeah. Well, in a 50-game season, it's conceivable we could win enough games to get in the world. I mean, we could have.
You're not wrong.
If they could just pretend it was April, I think we would have a legitimate shot at this one. But I guess the point being that if you are a restaurant owner right now, you probably do want them to play because you are, even if you're operating in a limited capacity, you will have people come in
for sure
just to watch that game because they want a collegial environment, right? They want that fan environment, and that is not going to happen in the stadium, but it could conceivably happen in a restaurant to some degree, even with spacing, people clapping and whatnot, and that's what the whole fan thing is about. So my guess is there's going to be, if I'm in the hospitality industry or in the bar industry or restaurant industry, I'm a strong advocate for this.
Yeah, I don't have TV at home. I've cut the cord, so I have to go somewhere if I want to watch live sports. That's part of it. What in the world are these stations going to do? Like, what does a YES Network or a Root Sports or somebody whose programming for a big chunk of the year consists of tons and tons of baseball, hours and hours a day, what do they play?
Well,
what's on those stations?
Best of, right? Haven't they been doing, like, the Mariners, you know, 1984 season where they won 78 games and everyone's like reminiscing about the colors of the uniform or some player from back then, right? I mean, I mean, it's been a lot of documentaries and a lot of revisiting, but I think that everyone's kind of maxed out on that. And particularly if you're a team without, I mean, we only have like, as a Mariners person, and I'm not, I mean, I grew up a Giants fan, the Mariners fans, the cup of reminiscing is a shallow one.
Oh, yeah.
You've got 1995.
Yeah.
We all know that one. And you've got the 116 win season. We all know that one. And we've got Lou Piniella, you know, like ripping up home plate or whatever. We've got that. But it's really not. And a lot of Ken Griffey collisions with the wall and the beautiful home run swing.
That's right.
And Ichiro doing Ichiro.
Yeah.
right?
That's about it.
That's about it.
Uh-huh.
They're done.
The big unit?
Yeah. He left on kind of bad terms. They don't show a whole lot of Randy Johnson highlights.
It's just a great
nickname. And I don't think he was pitching for... Stacey might know this. Was he pitching for the Mariners or was he pitching for the Diamondbacks when he blew up that bird?
Oh,
great question.
I don't know why I think the Mariners. Maybe because it's just always this like Mariners memory, but yeah. I'm not entirely sure, actually.
I think Mariners,
I've
too.
Always assumed it was the Mariners.
That's my guess.
Moment.
Stace, can you Google it? And we'll take bets.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Mariners.
Yes,
what do you think?
I'm going to say Diamondbacks because you guys are saying Mariners.
All right. All right. Always,
okay, okay.
Always the contrarian.
Okay.
This is fun.
Oh, here's a video. You know what, you guys?
What?
I think.
Come on.
Diamondbacks.
No.
Yeah.
I think it was the Diamondbacks.
Never mind.
Let's see here.
So we don't even get that highlight.
No.
Yeah. Oh, man, we get nothing.
It's tragic.
Nothing. Oh, now I'm watching this bird die over and over and over again.
Oh, I'm sorry to laugh.
That was also a statement in favor of natural selection, because if you're that bird,
I mean, what do you do?
You ought not reproduce.
Yeah, what are you doing?
You got to go. Come on.
Anything else, Stace? Hot on the presses, as they say? They don't say
hot
that.
On the presses.
Yeah, that's a
yeah,
that's
baseball
a...
was the big thing. We talked about Bobby Wagner, who... had a Zoom press call conference. Gosh, it's so weird. The entire offseason has been virtual for the Seahawks, too.
Right.
Had a Zoom conference call with reporters yesterday afternoon. Had some really, really poignant things to say about not just the Black Lives Matter movement, but about the protests that have been happening all over the country. And I think one thing that stuck out with me, especially, and we really aren't going to be able to devote enough, like a fair amount of time to this, which
sure.
is, I kind of regret bringing it up this late, but he said, essentially saying like, would you guys care more if it was me? And I think it was important for him to say, and it wasn't this accusatory thing. It was more just saying like, we have people that listen to sports radio because they love sports radio. And I don't know a single Seahawks fan that doesn't love Bobby Wagner, but I do know that there are probably some fans out there who maybe have an issue with standing with recognizing racism as a real problem, and it makes them uncomfortable and they don't like talking about it. And so I think it was just another way for Bobby Wagner to say like, hey, you can't love an athlete mm-hmm. and then not also love and respect that he's a Black man also.
Right.
So you don't get to just separate that. Like if you love me, then like love me.
I like that.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah. I listened to some of his press conference. I thought it was great.
Bobby's great.
Yeah.
He's a good, I mean, he's smart. He's a great player. I mean, on the field and off the field, everything I hear about him is just what a good guy. I really respect, especially in the face of so many people who say, like, stick to sports and sit down and do your job, that kind of stuff. I really do admire more and more athletes who speak up and talk about these issues because they really are in very powerful positions, and they're using that to try and do good, and that's something I'm always a fan of.
Me as well.
Yeah. All right, Stace.
All right.
We're out of time.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
Yeah, we're going to finish the rest of the segment talking about you.
Yes.
But not with you.
That's right.
I hate you.
About
guys.
You without you. The Stacey Joe story.
Stacey Joe story.
Dang it. Every time.
I love this. This is going to stick.
Yeah.
No. Done. Just kidding. I act like I'm not completely vain and self-absorbed.
I know. You
I'm like, you guys, no. Please don't talk about me every segment.
Oh, we got to go. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Stace.
All right. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Stacey Joe from the Tom, Jake, and Stacey show you can hear every day on 710 ESPN from noon to 3. And we will be back with more Cairo Nights right after this. Welcome back to Cairo Nights, everybody. Mace and Mike, hope you're having a great Tuesday evening. If you're out there protesting, if you're out there, whatever you're doing, hope you're safe. Hope everybody's okay. Something that's happened online, Mike, recently, especially today. Today it was is when it really blew up. Is a bunch of people on social media, Instagram primarily, Twitter as well, have been posting these black squares in sort of solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement. I think one of the it was started by some folks in the music industry, and it sort of spread out from there. And people wanted to post something that showed that they were in support of what was going on, of the Black Lives Matter movement, of the protesters out there. But it's sort of it happened. I did it last night, and then I woke up this morning and people were upset about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it went awry. I'm not sure. So you always wonder, we're in such a conspiracy theory world, and I'm a big non-believer in most conspiracy theories.
Right.
I do think that there are people who do get away with stuff, though. It's not that I don't think that that happens. This is one that actually turned out kind of weird, because the black square, you've seen it from the rainbow pattern as well. You've mm-hmm. seen it in a variety of ways on social media to show sort of this standing position point
right.
via image about what you believe. And also sometimes these things are born of a particular movement at a moment in time. And so a lot of people, just to show that, hey, there's this many of us out there who believe in the same thing. The problem has been the blackout square has actually, when you tag it with Black Lives Matter, it's been populating these Instagram feeds. And so no one actually gets the information.
Right.
If they're interested in that, their searching comes up with just black squares. And I think it was an unintended. The generous assumption is that it's an unintended effect. People really did not. When you tweeted it out, you did, or whatever you did with the Instagram or whatever
Instagram,
you used.
Yeah. And I didn't use the hashtag, for the record.
So that makes it a little bit better. But now people are realizing that this is, so when your feed has nothing but black squares in it, you're getting a show of solidarity, but you're not getting any of the resources, any of the links, any of the things that would actually get you to maybe a different level of understanding of what people are talking about, should you want that. And my guess is that if you're posting a black square or looking at them, you probably do want a little bit of engagement there, if not a lot.
Yeah, I never do these kinds of things. I hate when people are like, we're all doing this, we're all doing that, because it's really a mostly futile exercise. But when I was scrolling through my feed last night, everybody had one. I saw so many, and I was really taken by the momentum. Barack Obama put out a statement, and he was talking about momentum and how that's
right.
important in issues like this and movements like this. And I really felt a sense of momentum, like, oh, wow, there's so many people doing this that people who aren't involved in this are going to end up seeing it, that it's really going to be a way to push things a little bit forward. And what I didn't understand is the idea that, you know, there are people on the ground. There are people who have a lot more at stake than I do, who are keeping track of these hashtags and of all the information that's happening online and using social media to do that. And so, like you were saying, this is just kind of a thing that ends up obscuring the message.
Literally obscuring the message. And so if you're going to be tweeting out a black square, or you're going to be using it on Instagram, Insta, I guess is what I'm supposed to be saying these
days. The kids call it.
Then you don't use the hashtag along with it.
Right.
Then it makes it a lot better for people right. who are actually searching for information, because every day, if you type in your search field, whether using Google or Bing or whatever, black lives or black lives matter is the autofill, because it's such a search term at this point, because I think people are still trying to get their head around what it means. In fact, this very company fired a prominent not here in Seattle, but in Sacramento, fired somebody today for a response to a Black Lives Matter question. And I mean, so it's front of mind for everybody. It's what's being chanted and see all over Seattle right at this very moment.
Yeah.
And so it pays to learn something about it, but just, you know, if you are going to join the people trying to do some form of solidarity via social media, because it's more difficult and a little more dangerous to do it in person anymore,
then don't include the hashtag on it, because the hashtag has generally been very, very good to allow people to find actual information about things.
Right. The other thing that struck me was, well, this is the whole point of this is to amplify black voices, right? Specifically.
Right.
That to give a larger bullhorn to black voices to communicate, because this is, I mean, listening again is sort of step one here, that hear what they have to say. People with crazy different life experiences than you. My interactions with police are very different from black people's interactions with police. I remember, in fact, I was pulled over one time by about six or seven cruisers at gunpoint. I believe it's called a felony stop. That's what I was told later anyway. But I was driving down Broadway on Capitol Hill after a show, and I had my friends in the car. I was the driver. And I see this cop car in my rear view mirror, and I'm doing the speed limit, and I'm like, okay. And then another one pulls in, and then another one pulls in. I'm like, oh, it's like something's going on here. And the sirens go off. I pull over. The spotlight comes on. They get over the horn. They say, put your hands out of the car. I put my hands out of the car. I have to reach down, open my car door using the outside handle. And then I put my hands on the back of my head and have to walk backwards to their voice. And the whole time, I'm going right before they told me to get out of the car, I looked at my friends and I knew. I was like, they think I'm somebody I'm not. I just knew that it was a mistake. It just felt like it. But even when I was walking backwards and I start to see officers in my peripheral who have guns drawn on my friends in the car still, that freaked me out. But I remember thinking, thank God I'm white. And that's what I thought. At no point did I think this mistake is going to turn into something that's going to end the lives of me or my friends.
Yeah.
They cuffed me. They put me in the patrol car. Turns out they ran my plates. It was the wrong state, and it was some stolen car situation. And Sergeant came by and cleared everything later. And they were tense. It was a number of years ago when an officer had just been killed sitting in his car.
Right.
And it was that. Seattle, it was like 2 days later.
Oh, yeah. Then they were.
So everybody was on edge. I understood that. But even then, I remember thinking this could have turned out very differently if I didn't look the way I do.
Yeah. Same thing. I actually got picked up, cuffed, put in jail in Yosemite National Park for a mistaken identity thing. And I don't remember thinking that I'm glad I'm white. I do remember thinking, though, and being convinced, because I've been pulled over a couple times for speeding, you know, every now and then, you know, I've had interactions with cops, all of them, none of them, horrible.
Right.
Some better than others.
Right, sure.
I don't remember ever feeling like if I don't obey the rules, something bad is going to, you know, if I obey the rules, nothing bad is going to happen to me.
Right.
If I just, you know, even though I get hot under the collar and even though I may say something smart back at them, I never really worried about getting beaten up, and I never really worried about obeying the rules and getting out of it safe. And that is not the situation for a lot of people.
We'll be back, everybody. More Cairo Nights right after this. Welcome back to Cairo Nights, everybody. Mace and Mike shutting down a Tuesday here on the show. Frank Shires is with us. DB, of course, is here. And we're going to tell you what's on our minds. You can tell us if you like. 98973, the State Roofing text line. Coast to coast on in just a few moments. But anybody want to go first?
Sure, I'll jump.
Chomping? Frank Shires.
You know, I'm waiting kind of to find out what's going to happen up in Capitol Hill with the protest and all that. But I am at a point where I'm beginning to ask myself, and what's on my mind is, where's this going? I mean, I was alive during the 1960s, right? I remember the anti-war protests very vividly. It's the same thing with the Iraq War, okay? The anti-war protest was basically against the draft. Mm-hmm. That ended.
Mm-hmm.
The Iraq War, basically, in the end, you know, it happened and we're done, right? What's going to happen here? I mean, that's the thing that I look at. I mean, I understand the protest. What happened was awful. And yes, there are changes that probably have to be made. What's going to happen? I mean, the thing that's striking me is that this is a protest that doesn't have a clear goal.
Oh, sure it does.
That you can, let me put it this way, that you can actually do.
I disagree entirely.
Okay.
Police reform, justice reform, that's the goal. And so the idea is that, you know, police departments shouldn't be, as far as I understand it, that police departments shouldn't be so much of these paramilitary organizations, that there have to be there has to be accountability in place. Mm-hmm. There are too many times where white police officers kill innocent unarmed black people and walk away and face no consequences. Mm-hmm. And those are the first steps of the things that need to change, as far as I understand it. Do you want to add to that, DB? Is that about right?
Yeah, and I mean, jumping from that, and I think this is obviously on most of our minds, but what's on my mind specifically, and Frank, you talk about the protesters, is I have not been I have not actively been protesting or demonstrating for any of the Black Lives Matter movement that has taken place within the past 5 to 10 years. And I'm out of excuses. I'm too young. It's you know, my parents don't want me to do it. And then eventually it was, you know, work. I'm working too much. I you know, during those specific hours, I can't be out there.
Yeah.
No, there's not an excuse anymore. If I firmly believe as much as I believe in this cause, then what makes me any different from anyone else out there?
Right.
And I think we all, I mean, obviously we're all asking ourselves a lot of questions, but I think we all need to ask ourselves, why are we not out there doing something? And if not doing something out there, doing something in terms of signing petitions, in terms of donating to the proper programs and trying to support this thing so that there is change, Frank. Like you said, what is the change? Well, we need to be that change. We need to make that change. And I'm calling myself out that I have not been out there enough to make that change. And that's something I really want to change, especially when I move down to Portland, where their protests are very large in their Pioneer Square, and seeing a lot of those images and wanting to act, wanting to be a part of this greater movement.
Yeah, I feel that too. And look back at my year on the radio here, year plus, and this week, and there's a difference in the way I assert my opinions, the way I talk about things. You know, for a while, I was just consumed with the idea of this imaginary Cairo radio listener, that everything that came out of my mouth, I was like, well, would this be okay with this imaginary Cairo radio listener? And I don't care anymore. And I think that's my responsibility, I'm very uncomfortable doing it, but it's what I have to do. Mike?
Yeah.
Sorry, buddy.
Thank you. Frank, you're wrong. I know you were older than me at that particular point. They were protesting against the Vietnam War, which they did get ended. They were also protesting against the draft. Remember, the draft was also being opposed by a lot of wealthy people. They got it ended because they were wealthy people. They didn't get it ended because they were the people in the streets. And they were also protesting a variety of other things. And the whole idea that you need to have some sort of tangible contract signed end goal is not really the point of free speech at all.
Right.
And the point of them getting out there and doing this is to let people know not just that a minority group is upset about this, but that everyone is. And that's why they say people like DB and other people who need to get out there, why reporters go out there, because the more they see, the more they know that there's a bunch of people unhappy about it, including people who are not directly affected by it, people of a variety of incomes. I understand what the end point here is here perfectly. Do I think we're going to get there? Well, I hope. I mean, I think we're farther along there than we were in 1940, but we are nowhere near as far along as we should be. And if you look at the way the country, statistically, if you look at the way the country behaves toward minority, it's appalling. I mean, there's no two ways about it. If you look at, I took a map of the racial demographic spread of Seattle in 1945, where black people and white people and other people lived. Mm-hmm. And I overlaid a map from 2 years ago, and they looked the same. And you know why they look the same? Because that was years of redlining, literally in the deeds of houses up there. So if you're wondering what they're protesting about, it is in our DNA as a society is what they're protesting about.
Yeah.
So I think, more power to them, the protesters. This is not me endorsing rioting and not me endorsing looting. This is me endorsing the fact that they're out there. And if they can't all cogently, like in two or three sentences, explain what it is they're protesting about, that's on you as a listener. That is not on them. They know something's wrong. And sometimes it's like you're hearing it through the wall. You don't quite know how to articulate it, but you know it's something bad. And for me, that's plenty.
Well said, Mike. That's it, folks. That's the end of the show. For Mike Lewis, Frank Shires, DB, I'm Aaron Mason. Thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you tomorrow. When you're in danger, take a look over.